Growthpoint Properties, the largest listed REIT today, announced a 5.9% growth in distributable income to $3.1 billion, with revenue from the group up 4.3% for the half year, and that represents dividend growth of 4.5% per share for investors. The bottom line, though, reading through the results, is that there's little to no growth in South Africa, and increasingly growth is having to be found offshore. I've got CEO Norbert Sasser on the line. Evening, Norbert. How would you characterize the market as you see it right now South Africa?
Evening, Michael. Yeah, thanks for that introduction. Thanks for having me on the show. Look, South Africa, as you pointed out in that introduction, is definitely in a very tough space at the moment. I think it's the first time in many, many years that I've seen it this bad. I think probably in all the time that we've been busy growing Growthpoint from the early 2000s to now, it's never really been that tough. I feel like a broken record when I speak to investors about every year we're saying it's tough, it's getting tougher. And I mean, this is just another year where we just keep repeating the same, it's tough and it's getting tougher. You know, all three of these sectors, retail, office and industrial, are now sort of showing negative trends and tendencies in terms of the what we call the property fundamentals. So renewal rates, rental growth rates, vacancies going up, et cetera, et cetera. So it's undoubtedly, you know, extremely, extremely tough in the domestic market. It's never been more competitive either. You know, you've got something like 50 listed property counters all chasing the same users for their space. So it's hard. And I think thank goodness for our strategies, I think, that we adopted a couple of years back, which spoke to internationalization, trading and development, and fund management. These definitely have come through and saved the day for us.
Yeah, and so it comes through the amount of growth that you are getting offshore at the moment. I want to say for a moment on the vacancy situation, and specifically office. That's up over 10%. We know there's a lot of available office space in the market at the moment. One just has to survey the skyline around Sandton and Rosebank to know that. What sort of sweeteners are you having to throw into lease renegotiations or onboarding new tenants? The power, as you've said, sort of sits in the tenants' hands right now with this oversupply.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the tenant has got an enormous amount of choice. There's no, with vacancy levels, as you're saying, into double digits in office. I mean, that's the first time we've hit double digit vacancies in office for a long time. It does make it, we are definitely price takers in that regard. So, we've got a number of programs on the go, where we offer incentives, for a 5-year lease. You could essentially get the first year rent free through incentives that we offer users. You know, where we say we'll either pay some of your relocation costs, or we might give you a handsome tenant installation fit out, or we can actually just give you a rent free period. So the tenant's got some choice as to how to effectively monetize that that benefit that we give. And it's never been as good as far as I'm concerned for tenants. But at the end of the day, there's a big differentiation in the kind of space that is on offer. You know, there's and hence you might still, and therefore I think you're still seeing a number of new developments taking place, because arguably you might say if you've got national vacancies up at 12-13% and Growthpoint's got office vacancies over 10, you know, why are there any new developments at all? But the little demand that actually does exists for a specific kind of product. And if you can't offer that to your tenant, then, there are some of our competitors that are building and offering it. So you actually, as a defensive ploy, you're needing to build new modern energy efficient green buildings, yeah, so that you can offer that variety to your and choice to your customer base.
Yeah, that is still a rising trend, not surprising with the likes of Eskom and our water situation. We'll come to that. You have built a desal plant down at the V&A waterfront, which does stand out still as the jewel in the South African crown, but even the Well Hill down in Cape's retail jewel have found times tough. I want to touch on the Edcon story. And and speaking of retail, it has raised all sorts of debatable points, Norbert. And while you participated in Edcon's restructuring, you provided it with an injection of 110 million rand equity injection there. You said rental deals or rental reduction for it wouldn't have really been in line with your strategy. And while you aren't investing in the traditional sense, in inverted commas, you are doing, I suppose, what you can to prevent large vacancies in your malls, considering the size of Eskom, and vacancies that in this market you'd probably struggle to fill, considering how soggy the retail sector is. So what do you do? You are stuck between a rock and a hard place, but it couldn't have been an easy decision for a landlord to be almost taking an investment stake, an equity stake in one of their tenants. Just take me through the debates that you had at board level.
Sure. So I think first and foremost, you know, the notion of rent reductions is obviously, I think, very sensitive, you know, and there's no doubt that if you're starting to offer rent reductions to one customer, the next one's going to say, oh, I did, he get a rent reduction, no. I didn't. So we want to avoid that discussion and debate at all costs. So we took a decision strategically that, you know, it is in the best interest not only of the property industry, the retail industry, probably, if you want to, you know, be a bit dramatic about it, in the interest of the country, really, for Edcon actually to survive. There's a lot of people that are employed there. At this particular point in time, with things being as tough as they are, you didn't want another, you know, 30, 40,000 people without jobs. And we took, I guess, for us, the most appropriate decision, you know, to invest into the equity of Edcon in an attempt to save it from going into liquidation. Now, as you say, it's not good business for a landlord to be investing in its tenants. It does happen from time to time. And I think this particular scenario, as it played out, you know, meant that you know, there's a sort of almost a bit of a systemic risk to Edcon failing, and we felt it was in everybody's best interest, including our own, obviously, sure. To rather participate and ensure that Edcon survive the day.
Too big to fail, in a sense. In history, how many retailers do you know that have been successfully rescued out of this kind of situation?
Michael, I don't really have any knowledge on that, to be honest with you. I'd suggest a few, and I'd suggest, given the era that we're in with the department stores being out of favor and online sales, you know, taking a fair share of the market, it'll be a tough turnaround program and strategy for them. But given that they'll be well capitalized with no debt, you know, certainly they got there's a fair chance, to my mind, that they will survive and that they'll turn the ship around. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
One certainly wishes Grant and his team well. I think if anyone could do it, Grant Patterson can. And Edcon is, as you say, systemically very important to the clothing and retail industry as well. It's one of the largest procurers of locally made retail and apparel wear. So one would not like to see Edcon hit the wall. Your growth outside South Africa is impressive, though. Romania, Poland, Australia, there appears to be good opportunity. How are you funding this growth?
Michael, at the moment, I guess we're in a relatively capital-constrained environment, in as much as, you know, issuing equity or equity issuance is not really on the cards. We're the share trading at a discount to NAV. On the other hand, asset sales, you know, we've got some assets we're wishing to dispose of, which could be used to fund the offshore expansion. Even there, there's some constraints in the local market. So, on balance, you know, we're looking at increasing our leverage. You will have seen our loan-to-value ratio rise, albeit marginally. I think we're sitting at 35.9% as a group consolidated loan-to-value. To my mind, still well, you know, very well and conservatively capitalized. And, you know, we've got our Moody's rating, which is triple A. I think we're one of only three corporates in South Africa with a triple A rating. So we're not looking to do anything untoward, which might jeopardize that. But for now, the only real, let's say, access to funding for this offshore expansion is through some additional leverage.
And leverage in an environment where, fortunately, it's now all about the dove father in Jay Powell and the Fed chair, after it does seem someone in the White House leaned on him in December. All of the interest rate increases that were being penciled in by economists, and the dot plot had about three this year, now off the table. What sort of loan to value are you going to be comfortable with in an environment where it does look like the global economy is slowing down? There might be some potential for unknown shocks in the system, and your loan to value has crept up to 35.9% from 35.2%. What would you be comfortable with?
So I guess again, Michael, the overriding factor or thing that we would take into account there is our Moody's rating. We've always maintained that we want to have an investment grade rating. We've never said that we at all times have to have a triple A investment grade rating, but I think that has stood us in really good stead over the years. And we're going to do our best to not do anything which will jeopardize that, which, to my understanding, you never know, these rating agencies do change the way in which they look at some of the financial metrics from time to time, but based on our understanding of what they look at, it's roughly a 40-odd% loan to value ratio, which would, once you go above that, they would look to you to demonstrate to them how you're going to get it back below that again, in a relatively short space of time.
Yeah, which does still give you some wiggle room in terms of that international expansion
Correct.
Strategy. Just as we wrap up, Norbert, it has been put to me by a couple of property analysts that we might start seeing some of the carrying value of the buildings on property REITs balance sheets having to be readjusted with all this oversupply in the local market, in office space in particular. Is that a real concern? Is that something that the management team is looking at if we don't start to see growth?
Absolutely. And I think if you look back at our results over the last 18 months, maybe even 24 months, you'll see that we've had very little revaluation of our property portfolio, and certainly not, it would have been marginally upwards. For this particular 6 month period, I think the SA portfolio valuation was pretty much flat. The bulk of growth that we've got in property valuation and consequently on NAV has come out of the Australian business and the Eastern Europe, or the Eastern European business to a lesser extent because we don't consolidate, but the Australian business. And downward property revaluations to my mind is a real risk if the economy doesn't start performing and some of the property fundamentals, don't return in form of rental growth and vacancies filling up, et cetera, et cetera.
We need growth with a capital G. That was Norbert Sasse, Group CEO of Growthpoint Property, talking about the half year mark. And so far, so good. But thanks really to its offshore strategy. And that's where we're going to end it off. Thanks a lot, Norbert.